Episode 1027, My Strength is My Story with Ashley Slater, Braving Sorrow Together.
Moms, needing a little inspiration and a ray of hope? You've come to the right place. This is the show that you can turn to for just the pick-me-up you need. This is Create Your Now, Your Best Selfie. Here's your host, certified life coach, personal trainer, and nutritionist, Christiane Wargo.
Staring at a stop sign, watching people drive by, T-Mac on the radio.
Happy, happy day. Today is my favorite day. It is My Strength is My Story series. And we have on with us a special guest, Ashley Slater. She is going to share with you some life experiences and stories from others about a constant that we all have in life that we share, but we cannot escape. You'll want to stay tuned. For those of you who are brand new to Create Your Now, friends and family of Ashley's, welcome to our incredible family. I'm so delighted of your presence. If you already haven't had the opportunity, you'll want to head on over to createyournow.com where you can learn more and sign up for the Kisses newsletter, the Keep It Simple Strategy Everyday Solutions to Live, Love, and Impact. Well, Ashley definitely has had impact in her life. Not only has she been impacted, but she has created impact. I'm pressing ahead, creating transformation. And that is exactly what she has done in her brand new book, Braving Sorrow Together. She shares with us this constant called loss. And it's not loss in regards to just death. And with the wake of New York City and what has come of that with the terrorist attack there, this timing of this book and this episode could not be more important. But we take it a step further, she does. And she really focuses on loss as in dreams and relationships and finances. We have a lot of fun talking about a lot of serious things that, you know what, we just don't ever want to talk about. They're hard conversations. So get your heart out. Get your head together. Let's connect the two as we welcome in Ashley Slater, Braving Sorrow Together. Hello and welcome to Create Your Now, Your Best Selfie. We are here with an incredible woman, Ashley Slater. Ashley Slater is a woman of many words, of over 20 years of writing and a master's degree in communication. Her greatest exchange of words, though, are to her beloved sweet husband, Ted, of 15 years, and their four beautiful daughters. Ashley is an author of two books, Team Us, The Unifying Power of Grace, Commitment, and Cooperation in Marriage, and her brand new book, Braving Sorrow Together, The Transformative Power of Faith and Community When Life is Hard. I'm excited to have my friend and sister in Christ here to talk about a constant in life that none of us can escape. Ashley, welcome.
Thank you so much. I'm excited to be here and to talk with you.
Oh, well, the privilege and the honor is all mine. I read your book. I love your book. I cried with your book. And it was one of those books where honestly, I mean, I got to be frank with you here. Mm-hmm. I read the title and I was like, oh, it's another one of those. Meaning that I just took it immediately all the way to death. That's where I went.
Right.
Okay. Braving Sorrow Together. And we'll talk a little bit more about that. But I want people to know who are listening and watching that this is not all about death. You're talking about a constant in life. And what is that?
It's loss. Mm-hmm. It's just this. And it can be, you know, in the book, it is, I was very purposeful not to just talk about death because I think that's only one type of loss. I mean, it's a horrible loss and it's one that probably impacts us the hardest, mm-hmm. but we face so many different losses, whether it's a health loss, the loss of a job, the loss of a dream, the loss of a relationship, the loss of control, which I think comes with every single loss we experience. We go, wait a minute. If I were in charge, that would not have happened. And we have to grapple with this idea of, oh, maybe I'm not in charge, no matter how hard I try to be.
Mm-hmm. Well, I love that you really kind of stumped me, honestly, with that title. And I want to dive into that here in a few minutes. But first, I have to ask, what keeps Ashley productive and happy these days?
Ooh, okay. That's kind of a funny question because I have another, my girls dance a lot. And I have a friend and her daughter dances too. And she's like, so how are you doing these last couple weeks? I said, I am living on sun chips and wine. It has turned to coffee and chocolate this week because I ran out of sun chips. But yeah, I'm, you know, lots of coffee, chocolate, support for my husband. He's great. He will be like, okay, like right now he's running interference because we homeschool, making sure the kids do not come in while we are doing this interview. Just lots of prayer too. And a lot of times it's just, all right, Lord, help me with today. Help me go get through this. Give me wisdom, just strength and energy. So those things are really helping me the last couple weeks.
Oh, wow. Well, you definitely have a full household, and especially it's full of a lot of estrogen.
Yes. Yes.
We need to be praying for Ted. Saint Ted is what we should name him.
Yeah. And he goes, he likes to say, I am man enough to handle this. Oh, and fortunately, he's one of those guys that's a really good dad, like dad for girls. Mm. He's their dad. You know, he protects them, teaches them, but he's also like their big brother who's like, okay, I got to help you toughen up. You know, so it's fun to see that relationship that they have with him.
How precious. I don't know how you find time to write books amongst everything else, because I know I read in your book, which has lots of stories, and you all are going to want to pick up your own copy of Braving Sorrow Together, The Transformative Power of Faith and Community When Life is Hard. But in your book, you mentioned about traveling. You ended up in New York, and your daughter that you were traveling with, or Ted would travel too. When you say they're really involved in dance, they're like really involved in dance.
Yes. My daughter, Ava, who's my 11-year-old, she's almost 12. She was in the national tour of the musical Annie last year. And so, yeah, we took her, we went to New York. My daughter, my two oldest wanted to audition. And I was like, all right, well, let's go do it. Because we had sold our house, we had a little extra money, we could travel up to New York and audition. I was like, because I don't want you to ever go, Mom, what would have happened if you would have let us audition? So I was like, all right, let's go see what will happen. And Ted and I are going, please don't let anything happen. Please don't let anything happen. You know, we just wanted it to be an experience. Yes. And my daughter, Ava, got cast in the show and was one of the seven orphans. So she traveled the country for 8 months. She's up in New York rehearsing and then all over the country. They did a lot of one night shows. And so my husband, he's a web developer. So he has a flexible job as far as he can work from anywhere. And his boss was very agreeable to letting him do that. But that meant that he was on the road for, I went out a couple times here and there, but since we homeschool, I needed to be home with the other kids. And so he's traveling most of the time. I'm at home with the three other kids, homeschooling, holding down the fort, and trying to write a book. It was intense. It was insane. There were moments when I was like, this book is just not going to get written. It's not going to happen. Yeah. It was a hard season. I mean, it was good, but it was hard. Mm-hmm. It was a mix of those two things.
Yeah. Well, it's a great lead in to your first chapter, which I love so much. You kind of already mentioned it, and I know I love it. It's that word control. I love control. I think it's a human nature type of, I don't know, characteristic, but especially with our mama bear mentality, we like to have control. Talk to me a little bit about control and the loss of it.
Yes, I am like the firstborn, oldest type A type daughter. I mean, I don't color coordinate things. Like, I could show you my closet and you'd be like, are you sure you're type A? Because it's a mess. But I like control. And when I feel like control is slipping away from me, I grasp for it more. Mm-hmm. But I think it was 7 years ago, I went through a miscarriage. Mm-hmm. And I had always struggled with fear at some level in my life. But after that miscarriage, it was like, oh, wait a minute. I really am out of control, because I can't even guarantee that a baby that I'm carrying is going to continue to thrive. And there was something about that that just, I don't know, I started having panic attacks, and the fear grew to the irrational level where I couldn't walk into a dark room in my house without having a panic attack, which doesn't make sense, because my house was safe. So I often tell Ted, it doesn't mean that my fear is rational, but it's real. I feel it. And so I have to figure out how to deal with it. But as I went through that, that really pushed me to go, okay, I am not in control, but God, you're never out of control. And so because I can't magically make these panic attacks go away. So I'm going to have to figure out ways to live an out of control life with them. But I have to figure out how, Lord, to trust you more and to really believe that in these moments when I feel the most out of control, you're there with me and you're helping me. And I mean, that was a grief process. It still is. I mean, I still struggle with, I'm not struggling with panic attacks as badly as I did back then, but I still have them. I think I had one last week. And I have to go, okay, it's, you know, Lord, you're not taking this away from me, so help me. And it's really accepting that I am not in control and grieving that loss has helped me deepen my trust in the Lord. Mm-hmm. And I think the loss of control, like I said, is one that no matter what we're going through, we feel. So it's one that we have to learn how to kind of be okay with, even as we grieve it.
Mm-hmm. And that loss of control, I mean, I think of your day, I can only imagine. I remember those days. You have four daughters. I have five children. So between the two of us, we've almost got a football team.
Right.
As the parents, and we definitely have a football team. But in looking at that, I think of how busy. All of us live in the busyness. Like, hey, how are you? Oh, I'm so busy. And we have that control, and we're constantly living amongst chaos and hecticness, if that's even such a word. If not, I just made it up. But how do you begin to really wrap your mind, your brain, and connect it with your heart, saying, it's okay that I've got a lot to do, but it's okay if I don't get it done, so you can release that control and truly let God take over?
That's a great question. You know, for me, I have had to start compartmentalizing my day. Mm-hmm. Instead of feeling this burden to get everything, you know, here's my list for all week and here's what I need to get done. I am saying, okay, this is my time. I am working with my kids. And yes, I would like to get all of these things done in our lesson, but what's my priority? Yes, it is to educate them, but it's also to build relationship with them. So if we're not getting this done because she wants to talk more about what we learned in science and isn't ready to move on to history, then I have to go, all right, I'm going to release the control to be in charge and check off everything on my list and go, okay, what is my priority in this moment? And that's relationship. And I think that that can come in to, as we're balancing the hecticness and these lists that we want to check off, is in each moment going, okay, but what is my priority? Is my priority to check all these things off, or is it to connect with this person, or is it to spend time with God, or is it, you know, to rest, because we need to rest. I think in the hecticness, that's what I forget the most is, oh, I probably should rest. Mm. So I think priorities and knowing what those are can be a big thing in helping us when we're just not sure how to live in the chaos.
Mm. Very wise words spoken from a very wise woman. Well, okay. Also in your book, in your book, but in the first chapter, Control, you mentioned something about Me Too.
Yes. You know, I love, and this is before the hashtag, you know, Me Too.
Yes.
I actually have a free ebook on my website called Me Too, which is additional stories from friends of mine, sharing their stories of going through sorrow and loss and how community and faith has helped them. And that's an ebook. But for Me Too is so powerful because we are coming alongside other people as they're going through things, or they're coming alongside us and they're saying, oh, you feel that way? You're not alone, which gives such a freedom, because I think a lot of the times, especially when we're grappling with loss, or as I had panic attacks, there's a lot of unstated shame in having anxiety and panic attacks, because there's a lot of judgment for that. Well, your faith is not strong enough because, you know, the Bible says that God hasn't given us a spirit of fear. So maybe you're just not praying hard enough. Maybe you need to read your Bible. Mm-hmm. But sometimes you can do all those things, and we live in a sinful world, so you still have to struggle with things. So there's a lot of shame in that, and figuring out who you can share that with and who not to share it with. But I found, as I talk about it, people write me and say, I'm so glad you said that, because me too. Mm. And I think the more that we say me too to each other, the more freedom and more healing and more just community we build in that, because we know that we're not alone. So those two words are really, really powerful. And I think we saw that even with the hashtag and people, you know, coming together and saying, no, that shame you're feeling, I get it. It's not your fault. Me too. Mm. So it's powerful words.
very powerful words. And I think you being a wordsmith, if I can term it that way, I mean, you've got a master's in communication. I feel like I'm going to trip over my words over this entire interview. But me too, I'm sure that you don't think that I've got it all put together, because I know I don't have it all put together. And if we share in that, it's a way of saying, hey, I get you, when I don't really know what else to say.
Yeah. And I think that's a great point, because I think when we're going through loss, we don't want advice. We don't want someone to over-spiritualize our situation or try to push us to move past it sooner than we're ready. We need someone to come and say, you know what, the grief that you're feeling over this, whether it is the loss of control or a loss of a dream or a relationship or a job, we want them to say, it's okay, feel that grief. I understand, because I've been there too. Me too. And then, I don't know, there's just such power in, you know, coming together and saying that with each other.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's take that whole thing from your coming together. And of course, before we go to that, everybody's going to want to pick up your brand new book, Braving Sorrow Together, The Transformative Power of Faith and Community When Life is Hard. Life is hard. But you know, you could have named this book, Ashley, Braving Sorrow. That's it.
Yeah.
But you put on this extra word, together. And there's a really big reason why you wanted to instill that into your title.
Yeah, well, I think we need each other. We're created for community. I mean, if you go back to the Bible and you look at even the Trinity, I mean, there's three persons in the Trinity. God lives in community. And then when he created us, he didn't just create Adam and say, oh, have fun, you know, with your own personal zoo. You know, he created Eve too. He put them in community. And then what I love is that when Jesus came to earth and walked on earth, he's God. He could have said, I got this. I am, you know, on my own. I can handle this. I don't need anybody. Instead, he gathered friends around him. And even when he was in the garden, you know, before the crucifixion, before the arrest, and he's praying, he pulls his three closest friends and says, come watch with me, you know, pray with me. And he's walking through this intense, you know, sorrow and grappling and struggling. And he, God, who's perfect, brings imperfect men and says, I need you to, you know, watch with me. And I think that in that we see that we're not made to go through things alone. You know, we want to. I think that especially when we go through loss and the pain and the hurt we feel, sometimes we feel like we can't take anymore. And that if we involve other people in it, there's going to be further hurt. And people do say the wrong things sometimes. Mm-hmm. And so I always try to go, okay, what's their motivation? Mm-hmm. What are their experiences? What are they bringing to this? You know, and how can I give them grace as they're trying to be there for me? But, you know, we have to brave that fear and say, okay, if God says that I need community, then I need community, and start reaching out. And I think I tell people that community doesn't mean your entire small group or every mom, you know, on your block. It means one or two trusted individuals that you already have a relationship and you already have trust with, that you feel comfortable talking to, because it doesn't take a ton of people to brave sorrow with you. It takes a few to say me too, and I'm praying for you, and I will listen as you need me to.
What a profound way to look at community, because I think we do think it's got to be a big group, like it's a football team. You know, and it doesn't have to necessarily be a football team. It might be for you if that works. But if it doesn't, that doesn't mean you're less of a person. Because you mentioned in there just a minute ago that we like to kind of hide, kind of retract within ourselves when things are happening. We don't want to share it for whatever our fear is. You know, fear of the shame, fear of we don't know how they're going to respond to me, or they just don't get what I'm going through. And I think that's a natural reaction, but you saying that we need to bring community around us will actually help get us through the process, not push us, because there's really not a timeline on grief.
Right. Yeah. And I think that's the hardest thing, because people do, there's this tendency to want to fix when people are going through pain and sorrow, to want to fix it and make them feel better. And I think part of that is we don't like to see people we love in pain. But part of it also, I think, is that it's uncomfortable to sit in somebody else's pain. And I think that we really have to, whether we're the ones grieving or the one helping someone grieve, is that we have to be okay with pain because it's part of life. And in order to heal and process it and work through it, we have to feel it. And I think that we can, you know, learn as we go together how to walk with each other through that.
Mm-hmm. You say you have to feel it. Some people would say, I feel pain. You have a chapter in here on health. We'll talk about that here in a minute. But we think that we can just take a pill and the pain should go away. We try to stop those feelings. How can we really, I guess, walk into those feelings not knowing what's on the other side?
Ooh, it's scary. I mean, I remember after our miscarriage, I was like, okay, I know that this hurts and it's going to hurt either now. It's going to hurt really bad now, or it's going to continue to hurt really bad for a long time. And I mean, it still hurts, but you know, with time it gets easier. And so I determined I was just going to sit in the pain and I was going to feel it and just feel it. And so I think you have to make the decision that to acknowledge your feelings and to feel them, even though it's really, really hard. And I think that's why it's also important to bring other people into it, because sometimes when we do actually dive into those feelings and we go, oh my lands, they're worse than I thought. We need somebody else there that we can reach up and grab their hand and say, okay, I feel like I'm falling in this pit and I need you to be there. I need you to be the strong one for me right now. Mm-hmm. And I think that as we invite people to be strong for us, that's a big help in actually being able to allow ourselves to feel that deep pain. And I think for me, just remembering, you know, scripture such as, you know, the Lord is close to the brokenhearted, mm-hmm. you know, reminding myself that means it's okay for us to feel brokenhearted because God knows we will, but he's promised to be with us in it. So I don't know if there's really an easy answer for that. I think sometimes it's just, you just have to do it mm-hmm. and go from there.
Yeah. It's kind of like growing up because Jesus did it. I mean, think of how much he was spit upon and beaten and made fun of and chastised. And I mean, we could go on and on and on. Yet he still did what he was put on this earth to do. And, right. you know, sometimes we do learn best, unfortunately, through pain. But we have to go through it to get to the other side so God can actually show, see, here, look. You have to trust me. You have to walk with me. You have to accept the Me Toos around you because I've placed them there in your life.
Yeah. And I think too, this is a little bit of a tangent, but I think it's important also to realize that we don't all grieve the same mm-hmm. because, I mean, some of us deal with that pain differently. And this has been something I've had to learn. And my marriage has been a great teacher of that because my husband and I grieve very differently. I am the all in emotion. Let me just feel this and talk it through again and again and again, because I got to get it out and I'm processing it. And my husband is a doer. Like, he's like, okay. You know, I think it was Fred Rogers that said, his mom always said, look for the helpers. Well, when Ted grieves, he goes, okay, who else is going through a similar sorrow? And I don't know if he fully realizes this is what he's doing, but he looks around for who else is walking through the same sorrow and how can he help them? Like, his dad died last summer and his first response was, how can I be there for my stepmom? What can I do to help her? And I know that back when we had our miscarriage, he was strong for me and he would do things for me. And I thought, he's burying his feelings. He is not dealing with this loss and this grief. He's just not grieving because he wasn't doing it the same way that I was. But as I've watched him grieve the loss of his dad, I went, oh, wait a minute. He is grieving it. He's just grieving it differently. So I think as we're feeling those emotions and coming alongside other people too, we have to realize that we're not all going to grieve the same way, and maybe not to push each other mm-hmm. to grieve in the same way that we would, but instead really try to look at this person and go, okay, I see how they're grieving like this, and how can I support them in the individual way that they're grieving? And I think that that is big as we're diving into those emotions, just recognizing that sometimes people aren't necessarily denying the emotions because they're not diving headfirst into them. They're just dealing with them in a different way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a way they take action on their own emotions.
Right.
Yeah. And of course, we do know that there are people who do stuff the everything down. And
oh, yeah.
Bitterness comes, and we get, yeah, it's not a good place in your life to be. And if you are listening to this right now and you feel like you have been challenged by grief, that maybe it's been 2, 3, 4 years even, and you don't feel like you have gotten where you need to go, I really want to encourage you to reach out to someone. If you have a local church that you attend, if you don't, I guarantee you, if you go to a church and knock on their door, they will open their door with welcoming arms to help you and to guide you and to get you to someone that can walk beside you. So I just wanted to throw that in there, Ashley, because...
No, that's good. Yeah.
You know, especially in today, look at our society. Some people could chalk this up to, you know, we're talking about Me Too, but now we've got the hashtag Me Too. There is some mental illness out there, and we don't talk about that. There's a stigma behind that too. Not that this is connected necessarily with grieving, but can they go hand in hand? I think anything can go hand in hand. And I think these types of conversations that we have, you taking time to write this book, allows us to have these hard conversations and to sit down with the people that we love, our family and our friends, and be there for them.
Yeah. And I think sometimes I found that as I was working on this book, I would strike up conversations with strangers, like at we have a Six Flags here. So we went to Six Flags because my kids had done the reading thing where you get a free ticket. And I'm sitting there and I'm watching one of them on a ride. And I start talking to this lady next to me. And I mentioned something about how my husband is, you know, just got back from visiting his dad who was battling a brain tumor and was terminal. And I had talked to this lady for 2 minutes and she started telling me about when her husband's father died and how that impacted them and the loss that they went through. And so it was interesting to see that when we're talking, when we start the conversation, when we're the ones brave enough to say, hey, here's what I've gone through and I'm going to talk vulnerably about it, which is very scary to do that because it means revealing the not so great parts about ourselves. And we all want to kind of present an image. But when we're willing to do that, other people say, oh, well, I have a story of loss too. So I think that in our individual lives, when we decide to be brave enough to start telling our stories, that creates community because it invites other people to tell us theirs too. And there's healing in that. Mm-hmm. You know, that helps us process the loss to talk about it. Mm-hmm. Well, at least it does for me because I'm a talker.
Yes, so. No, and you all are going to want to pick up your own book of Braving Sorrow Together, The Transformative Power of Faith and Community When Life is Hard. Life hasn't been real easy for you, Ashley. You share a lot of stories in here, and one of them, let's jump to health.
Okay.
Oh, I'm feeling the pain already. The loss of health, I think all of us can relate to that. If nothing else, New Year's is around the corner.
And oh, yeah.
We want to get a little slimmer and trimmer, and I would like to get a little taller. That's not going to happen. But in your circumstances of health, share a little bit about that story.
Well, when I was writing my first book, Team Us, I am a very, like I said, I'm type A. So I set out my schedule of, you know, okay, I wanted to have these chapters done by this date, and I want to have this done. And I had it all mapped out. And then I woke up one morning and was like, huh, I have this excruciating pain and I don't know what it is. And it turns out I had a kidney stone. Yeah. Which is that just knocked me out for the week, mm-hmm. You know, and I felt very out of control because, I mean, they had me on pain meds because I'm not going to say, no, don't give me pain meds because it's painful. Yeah. And so it knocked me out for the week and I couldn't get anything productive done. And it was just hard. I mean, I'm grateful that it was a short amount of time because I know that there's lots of people who deal with health issues chronically for years and years and years. And when I, you know, going through that, or, you know, I had a lot of morning sickness, like 24/7 when I was pregnant, those kind of things make me think and contemplate people who are going through health challenges on a much longer timeline. Mm-hmm. and give me a lot of sympathy for them. I mean, I don't know what they're going through because I haven't been there. That just, it's given me a lot of compassion for people going through that. And I've actually, since this book has come out, I've had vein issues in my leg that I'm getting fixed the last 2 weeks. It turns out my wisdom teeth are coming in. I'm 38, and all of a sudden they just decided to come in. And I went to the doctor going, oh, I hope that they'll say it's nothing. And they're like, no, they're impacted, and all three of them need to come out and soon. So, and then I had kids with multiple health challenges, and it's tiring. It's expensive. Mm-hmm. And I know that the grief for us, isn't just in feeling the health, but it's the medical bills after. I know that was true with my miscarriage because we ended up having a DNC because I was not emotionally, I just could not handle going through it by myself at home. Mm-hmm. And so getting the medical bills after was another loss to grieve when it came to health struggles. So I think it's interesting how it's not just the health struggle itself, it's all the things that come after it that also cause this sense of loss and grief.
Mm-hmm. In that chapter, you write in there kind of as a subtitle, if I can use that word, hope is thicker than blood.
Yes. Well, I tell a lot of personal stories in the book, but I also pull stories from scripture because, I mean, I think we forget that these people in the Bible were real people who had real feelings and went through real struggles. And there's the woman who, with the issue of blood, who was in all four gospels, and we don't know her name. I kind of wish we knew her name because I feel like, I don't know. I just wish we knew her name. But we see that she went through 12 years of having an issue of blood, which I talked about in the book, you know, it had to affect her not only physically, but socially, because she was considered unclean in that culture. And we see that she had been disappointed by all these doctors, and Jesus was probably her last hope, you know, her last hope of being restored and healed. And so it's interesting to see how she didn't let the social stigma of leaving her house, the discouragement she probably, and cynicism she probably felt from all the doctors who couldn't help her, keep her from seeking out Jesus. Her hope was stronger than that. And so we see her seek him out and she's healed. But as I mentioned in the book, you know, this is not, she was sick on Tuesday and she was healed on Friday. This was 12 years. So sometimes it takes, you know, sometimes God doesn't give us our answer when we want it. I mean, sometimes he doesn't heal us at all. But it's interesting to see how she never gave up hope. And I think that that's encouraging to us to remember who we hope in and, you know, that he's with us no matter what.
Who we hope in, that is such a strong statement. Obviously, as Christians, we believe that we're hoping in God. However, sometimes when you're in the middle of the loss, you kind of say, well, what about me? You've forgotten me, Lord. You've sent me away to the corner and you don't care about me anymore. If you're that person that's kind of in the middle of it, wanting to touch the robe of Jesus, to gain that hope that's thicker than blood, what would you tell that person?
Ooh, that's a great question. I would really, for me, when I have been in those moments of going, okay, God, you know, it's loss after loss. Do you still see me? Because I feel like I'm forgotten. Mm-hmm. I really encourage myself and start to look for the little ways that I see his love and I see his presence in my life. Those things that when I am mindful to look around me, remind me that he does see me and he does care. And it might be something as small as a friend gives me a $5 Starbucks card. Oh, I love coffee. So maybe it's not just my friend being nice to me. Maybe God prompted my friend to show me a little bit of love. You know, and so for me, it's trying to keep those things in perspective and not being afraid to grapple with the hard questions. I think it's okay. I mean, God can take it. God can take us going, okay, God, do you see me? Do you remember me? Are my prayers, you know, why should I pray? I mean, I struggled with that. Why should I pray? Because my prayers don't feel effective. And that's where my husband came in, and he's like, well, you pray because it's a relationship. You have a relationship with God, and that's why you communicate with him, not because you want him to give you something. I mean, it's nice when he does, but that's not why you pray. So I think just really being aware of those small kindnesses of God in everyday life that remind us that we're not alone.
That's beautiful. Because that's hard. I mean, that's truly real life when you're like, I've got bills to pay. You know, it's going to start getting cold around here. Maybe not where you are, but where I'm up north. We got snow coming this weekend. Okay, not a lot of it, but we got to come. You get the bills that begin to pile up and you're already living paycheck to paycheck. And, you know, you do begin to feel like, is there really a God? Is he really listening to me? I mean, he shows up. I can count maybe on one hand how many times he showed up. But, you know, what? How can I continue to hold on? Because I just feel so hopeless. And for you saying, look for the little things. Because God shows up if we're looking all the time. He's there. We are the ones who leave him. He doesn't ever leave us.
Right. I mean, and that's what he says. I mean, in scripture, it says, you know, he'll never leave us nor forsake us. I mean, and I think a big part of it, too, is realizing that our feelings are subjective. They're not reliable. I mean, the Bible says the heart is deceitful. Right. So some of it is going, OK, I feel this way and maybe I have good reason to feel this way. But what does God tell me is actually true? So how can I feed myself the truth that God will never leave me nor forsake me, even if I feel like he has? He's close to the brokenhearted, even if I feel like I'm alone. How can we feed those things to ourselves and really weigh our feelings in light of those things? And I think that helps to recognize that our feelings, you know, they're not, sometimes they're not a reliable source for us to base how we live life on.
And that's why we need to have a me too also. Someone right. to come together. And you guys are going to want to come together and pick up your own book of Braving Sorrow Together, The Transformative Power of Faith and Community When Life is Hard. Whew, life is hard. And I know for moms, it's really tough. Dads too, they got it rough. But you know, I don't know. We're going to leave them out of this conversation here. But I want to talk about something that I don't think anybody would have put together as a loss, and that's your dreams. You had a dream. I feel like we should be, you had a dream that one day you went from, I think I wrote down, you went from limelight to teacher.
Yes. Yeah. When I was about 14, I mean, I love stories told via media. I love movies. I love television shows. The narratives of books too. But I decided at 14, I wanted to be a television producer. And I went to undergrad and studied communication. I went to graduate school and studied film and television producing. And that was what I was going to do. I mean, I was very goal-oriented and very determined. And then in grad school, and I didn't go to grad school going, I'm looking for a husband. I want to get married. I thought maybe someday. Maybe. But first I'm going to do this career thing. And I ended up meeting my husband, and God slowly, you know, kind of worked on my heart going, oh, maybe you do want to get married now. And then we ended up having our first daughter. Right. I had her a few days before I walked in graduation, I think 2 days before.
Whoa.
Yeah. So I was on pain meds as I was walking, and my husband was like, you want to take a pillow with you? I was like, I'm not taking a pillow with me, but he was right. I should have. But so I found myself reevaluating what I felt like was a dream God had put in my heart. You know, I never doubted that he was leading me that in that direction. And then I had this baby and I was like, but wait a minute, producers work really long hours and sometimes they travel. And does that give me enough time to spend with my family? And so for me, I know that lots of women, you know, I think as moms, we need to support each other in our choices, whether that is to work or to stay home, whatever that looks like, we feel like God is individually calling us to do. But for me, I felt like he was telling me, I want you to lay that down and I want you to be a stay-at-home mom. And that was really, really hard. I mean, at first I had my daughter, and so I kind of buried it for a while. I didn't deal with it at first because I was all consumed with having a newborn. You know, and then as I had my second, my two oldest are about 18 months apart. And so I had my second one, and I remember nursing her and sitting on the couch and all this grief and loss that I hadn't dealt with hit me. you know, I would watch TV. I'd watch Gilmore Girls, and I'd be like, I wanted to work on a TV set, you know, but here I am. I'm nursing and I'm filling up sippy cups with milk. And I just feel like my life doesn't matter as much as the people who are making a bigger impact. And so I really had to grapple with that and grieve that. And it took me a while. And I think some of it is that I didn't deal with it in the ways I wish I would have, which is one, I buried it for a while. And I was also fearful to talk about it with others because my life was so full. I mean, I know people who wish they were married and had kids and could stay home with them. So who was I to say, but this isn't what I had planned, because they wanted it. That's something they wanted badly. And so I felt like I would be judged for not so much complaining, but talking about the loss I was experiencing because my life was good. And so I really kept it to myself. And then I started writing about it, which is kind of a backwards way to do it, to write about it first rather than talk to people about it. But it fit my comfort level at the time. And then people started going, oh, I get it. I felt that too. And I'm like, oh, so I'm not the only one. I could have been talking about this a long time ago and you wouldn't have judged me for it. And maybe I would have worked through it more quickly. But I think a lot of us have, you know, it might not be a career, you know, that people are mourning the loss of. You know, maybe it was the dream to live down the street from the grandparents and the cousins, and instead you're across the country and you don't have that tight family unit and support that you wish you did. Or maybe someone's struggling with infertility and having kids is not easy like everybody said it was going to be. And that's a dream that is not, you know, coming to fruition in the way that you hoped or when you hoped. So I think we all struggle with different dreams. For me, it was, you know, saying, okay, I'm not going to do this career that I had worked so hard toward.
Well, you could still do it now, right? You're not that old.
No, I feel old. Maybe it's all these like veins and wisdom teeth and...
And the book launch and just coming off of another, you know, yeah, probably a little bit chaotic right now.
Yeah. Well, my 6-year-old did. I was watching some video I did of an interview for my other book. She goes, you look a lot younger there. And I was like, she goes, well, no, you just look more tired now. I was like, thank you. I mean, 6-year-olds, they're very, very honest. I don't think she was trying to put me down, but it was just kind of humorous.
Yes. Yeah. That lovingly backhanded kind of compliment, but you kind of look good though, but you're still tired, Mom. You need to go get some sleep.
Yeah. But first, can you do this for me?
Right,
yeah,
exactly. But me too. Take care of me first.
Right, exactly.
Oh, I love it. Well, y'all are going to want to pick up your own copy of Braving Sorrow Together, The Transformative Power of Faith and Community When Life is Hard. We mentioned a little bit about the community and really coming together. Besides the coming together and having that support, what would you tell those people who aren't grieving? They're on the outside looking in on somebody. And they're like, I know I've got my sister going through something, and I really would like to reach out to her, but she's not saying anything, and I don't know what to do. I don't know how to start a conversation. I don't know anything, but I know that I want her to know that I'm there, but I don't know what to do because... Those people that are looking from the outside in on the ones who are hurting and in pain, they feel like then they're going to be shamed and an outcast for saying the wrong things. How would you encourage those people to be brave when their loved ones are facing sorrow?
Yeah, it's tricky. I would say start with the practical needs. I'd say, okay, I know that, you know, so-and-so is going through this difficult season and maybe she's having a hard time getting dinner on the table. So why don't I bring her dinner tonight? I mean, I've had friends do that for me. Say, I know you're having a rough week, so I'm going to order Panera for you. You just go pick it up. It'll be there waiting for you. So the practical things, or, okay, I know they're struggling financially and they need diapers. So I'm not even going to ask them. I know what brand of diapers they like. I'm just going to go buy them diapers and bring it to their house. Because a lot of times I think if we try to say, okay, can I do this for you? Or can I buy this for you? People, I know I struggle with it. I want to be the one who helps. I don't want to be the one who's helped. You know, I don't want to inconvenience people. I don't want them to use their resources because maybe they need the resources for something else, right. You know? So I think if sometimes we just take the initiative and we do those things and say we drop off dinner, you know, give them the opportunity on whether they want to invite us in or not, but give them the freedom to just take the dinner and shut the door and go inside and know that we're there and we're available, but we're not pushing ourselves into the places that maybe they're not comfortable for us to be yet. I mean, I remember after our miscarriage, Ted had a coworker and they had gone through, I think, one or two miscarriages. They did not even ask us what we needed. They just brought us pizza. Because they knew we were in shock and we had three kids to feed and we still had to feed them. Because our kids were especially at that age where they didn't understand, why is there no dinner right now? So they just brought us pizzas without even asking. And it was just so helpful. And it was them saying me too without actually saying me too. So I would start with the practical. And then from there, they may invite you in and say, okay, you know, I'm seeing that you love me in a way that's filling my needs. So maybe I can talk to you. Maybe I can trust you with what I'm going through.
Mm-hmm. Love it. I just, you know, Ashley, you just put this kind of blanket of comfort on a place no one really likes to be. And I think your book with the stories that you share, and there's lots of them. In reading the book, I guarantee you, you'll find at least one story you can relate to. And I would probably challenge you that there's at least three stories out there in the book that you either know someone or you can say, I've been there to some degree. Really to be able to open up this conversation, this dialogue, to where we can feel like, okay, maybe I can take the first step with my blanket and feel like it's okay. You know, nothing's going to happen drastically, but we all are here to lift each other up. God created each of us to be in relationship with each other, hence braving sorrow together.
Yeah, and I think we can feel sometimes when we start to become more aware of people's needs and people needing things, we can feel overwhelmed because there are so many people that we know going through things, and then we can start to beat ourselves up that we're not there for everybody as much as we wish we would. I mean, I go through that. I go through going, I just wrote this book on braving sorrow together, and I have this friend and this friend and this friend and this friend, and I don't have the time or energy to invest in each of them in exactly the same way. So I think if all of us look around and identify one or two people that we're specifically close to who's going through something and figure out ways we can be supportive to them, then we can live this out without being overwhelmed ourselves and carrying too much of a burden and guilt that we're not being everything to everybody. And I think that's something I have been learning recently. So I thought that was something to add and just encourage people that just because you can't be there for everybody doesn't mean you shouldn't be there for somebody.
Love it. Again, you're going to want to pick up your own copy of Braving Sorrow Together, The Transformative Power of Faith and Community When Life is Hard. Loss is a constant in life, and Ashley so eloquently writes about it, and I promise you, your heart will be touched and filled when you take a chance and you read the stories. And I want to begin to close here, Ashley, with this. We've talked a lot about miscarriage, and I don't think that's talked enough about in that loss. I have been very blessed, so I personally have never had to go through that. So I've never walked in those shoes. In your writing, in your book, you went to listen to your sweet son, and you wanted, at that time, you didn't know. And maybe, I'll try not to get too teary here. But maybe it was the connection because you named him Noah. And I have a Noah. And I just thought, we don't know. As you stood there and there was no sound, and it wasn't like it was your first child, so you knew what to expect.
Mm-hmm.
Your oldest daughter was in the room too.
Yeah.
And it was something that was very tough to go through, not just between you and Ted, but also with your oldest daughter, who really didn't understand how what they were expecting to be a baby, she was expecting a brother or sister, was no longer there.
Yeah, it was not what we were expecting. And we don't we don't actually know if our baby was a girl or a boy.
Okay.
But we liked the name Noah. I tend to think of it as her as a girl because I have so many girls, but we just liked that name. But yeah, I expected everything was going to be routine. You know, we were going to hear that. I would have never taken her with me if we knew. But yet, at the same time, I mean, obviously, since I've written on loss, I'm okay talking about it. At the same time, Ted and I are very open. And so for us, it was natural. You know, our kids knew I was pregnant, obviously. So it's very natural for us to bring them into the grieving process, even though they didn't fully understand it, and make it at a level that they could. I mean, I remember our Ava, our second daughter, saying when I went to go get a DNC, or I was on my way there, she was like, "I don't understand how Noah can be two places at once. How can Noah be in heaven but still be in your belly at the same time?" And so we had to answer those tough questions in a way that a 4-year-old would understand it. But it really opened up talking about heaven and talking about loss and grief. And so I think, you know, not everybody brings their small children into the grieving process. And I think that, you know, that's okay because it's their personal decision. And it is it's a lot harder to walk a kid through miscarriage than maybe the death of grandpa, because they can go to the funeral and they can say, I mean, it's still hard, but they can say, "I see grandpa and I understand, okay, he's not with us anymore." But a baby, there's nothing tangible, which makes it kind of more of a mystery. But it was tricky to walk our kids through that. And I blogged very openly about it. And that's when I started to realize, as you said, that we don't talk about it enough. Because I had friends who had had miscarriages maybe 5 years earlier go to me, "I didn't know I was allowed to grieve this loss. I didn't know I was allowed to talk about it." And now 5 years later, watching you walk through this, watching you name your baby, watching you put up tangible reminders in your house so that you can remember your baby, has encouraged me to do the same thing. You know, it's been years, but I never grieved it, and now I am. And thank you for telling me that it's okay. And I've heard that a lot. Is just this, thank you for talking about it so openly, because we don't do it enough.
Mm-hmm. What a heavenly blessing you are to many, Ashley.
Oh, thank you.
Woo. Okay. Well, if I don't know about you guys, I need my tissues already. You're going to want to pick up your own copy. Ashley, I know people are going to want to connect with you. They're going to want to say, "I got to find a way to either get to her, get to know her more. I want to hear from her." How can they find you?
Well, they can go to my website, which is ashleyslater.com. From there, they can find me on Facebook and Instagram. I'm very active on both of those. And at my website, I actually have some freebies. I have a free ebook called Me Too, which is more stories from friends of mine who are just vulnerably sharing about their lives. So, you know, they can read that and maybe go, "Me too. Okay. So how did they walk through this loss?" There's some printables like, what to, you know, 10 ways to brave sorrow when you're experiencing loss. It's just 10 things you can do when you're the one grieving. There's also one that's 10 ways to walk with someone else going through loss. So just a lot of practical stuff. And yeah, Facebook, Instagram, they get to hear all kinds of new stories from my life.
Well, I love new stories. And bringing that to kind of a closure, this series is called My Strength is My Story. So I have one last question for you. What has your story gifted you?
Oh, you know, I think it's given me empathy, more empathy for other people. And I think it's Brené Brown that talks about, you know, empathy is really entering into someone else's pain with them rather than pity, which is kind of going, "Oh, I'm so sorry you're going through that," you know, from a distance. And I think the hard parts and the good parts of my story have maybe helped me connect with people better than if I hadn't walked through those things.
Well, you are a blessing. Your book is a gem. And I just know God is going to be continuing to do great things in your life. Thank you so much for spending this time with us.
Oh, well, thank you. This has been so much fun. It's been fun to talk about, you know, I mean, I guess I shouldn't say it's fun to talk about loss, but it's just been fun to talk to you about the book. I have enjoyed it.
Yes. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Feeling inspired, ready to train for life and love your journey? Visit createyournow.com for more incredible resources to help you along the way. We'll see you next time on Create Your Now, Your Best Selfie. And remember, always be sure you consult your physician before beginning any health and fitness plan.